You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings. This is Lance White, and before I introduce tonight's guest, I'd like to give a special thanks to Nancy L. Hopkins, who hosts Cosmic Reality Radio Show, who has established a nonprofit foundation to get the amazing products made from shungite out to the public. Shungite is the quantum mineral found only in Russia that removes harmful EMF and Wi-Fi energies. Nancy has also teamed up with shungitehoney.com, which is using shungite to reverse bee damage from colony collapse disorder, that is then incorporated into the honey, which produces healing effects by eating the honey. The dwindling population for the hives has reversed, and bee health is being restored, and increases in bees and the queens have skyrocketed. You can find out more on Cosmic Reality Shungite Inc. and www.shungitehoney.com, both on Facebook. Tonight, I'm delighted to welcome Penny Kelly back to the show. Penny is an author, teacher, speaker, publisher, personal and spiritual consultant, and naturopathic physician. In 1979, working as a tool and process engineer for Chrysler Corporation, she experienced a full spontaneous awakening of Kundalini that completely changed her life. She left Chrysler and returned to school to study the brain, consciousness, perception, cognition, intelligence, and intuition. In 1987, Penny moved to Southwest Michigan and for 25 years has operated Lily Hill Farm and Learning Center. Today she travels, lectures, and teaches a variety of classes and workshops. She maintains a consulting practice, writes books and poetry, raises chickens, cattle, and grows organic vegetables and fruits. She is a mother of four children and has written seven or more books, among them The Evolving Human, The Elves of Lily Hill Farm, Robes, Getting Well Again Naturally, Consciousness and Energy Volumes 1 and 2 and 3, Religion, Sex, and Power in the Fall of Consciousness. You can find out more on her at her website, www.pennykelly.com. So now, let's welcome her back to the show. Hi, Penny. How are you?
Hi. I'm good.
Good.
How are you?
Well, you know, among all the topics that you and I know about so that we could possibly talk about, I thought maybe we could begin with something that everybody likes to find out more about, and that is the end of time or end times that is said to be the time that we're in right now.
Okay, yeah. I would say it a little bit differently, but yeah, okay, that's a good topic because I think it's totally misunderstood, totally.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, you want to go into it right now?
Why not? Let's just dive right in. And how would you say it would be more accurate to our perception?
Okay, so let me just say that most people are going to say the end of time, and the perception that goes with that is that we're coming to the end of life, we're coming to the end of us, we're coming to the end of something. And that isn't what it means at all. And a lot of religious people put a whole lot of religious spin on that. And then there's a whole bunch of biblical people who put the Armageddon spin on that. Mm-hmm. And the end of time is a totally, it's a concept that when you study consciousness, when you work with consciousness, you know, and I have for like 40 years now, you come to realize that consciousness will do whatever you tell it to do. And if you can clear out some of your biases and some of your fears, et cetera, that consciousness just goes and does it. And usually, if it does do what you tell it to. It's going to shock the daylights out of you. But basically, what you eventually come to realize after you've worked in the worked with consciousness for a while is that the end of time is simply a term that indicates that we are no longer organizing our perception in a linear fashion. So a linear fashion means that, you know, this happens, and as a result of this, the next thing happens, as a result of that, the next thing happens. And we develop this whole set of beliefs that says we have to follow this chain of events in order to get to an outcome. Once you start working with consciousness and you begin to be able to create what you want, an outcome, or, you know, an insight, or to get a piece of knowledge, or to have an experience right now, then you circumvent that whole linear thing. And so you end up realizing that you don't have to take all this time. Time is no longer a factor.
Right.
And you can go to it. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, because from another point of view, we're multidimensional, and we're also out of time, and so it takes no time at all to create. It's instantaneous. So we don't have to wait for results by taking steps and, well, when this happens, that this will happen, and then eventually I'm going to get the job that I love, and, you know, so on and so forth. And another thing that I wanted to bring up was that people often use the linear form of thinking as excuses for their belief systems. They believe that because such and such happened in their youth, that they're the way they are today, and that's not true. You can simply...
The linear thing is, I mean, we all grow up with linear thinking. It's actually kind of a Greek thinking style or perceptual habit. But, you know, I remember when I had a really serious infection, and I thought I was going to have surgery. And so I was looking for information. First of all, I was doing everything that I could think of. I was fasting. I did a liver flush. I did a purge, which is a total alkalinization of the body, because an alkaline state will not support an infection of any kind.
Right. And right. So,
you know,
important.
This whole thing, I kept asking, am I doing enough? Am I doing the right thing? I kept asking consciousness to bring me information that said, go have surgery, or no, just keep going with what you're doing. And that answer finally came in. I did not have to have the surgery. I mean, the doctor was furious, and so was my family, but I was like, No, it's going to be okay. You know, trust me. And, you know, and I was hurting. I was in a bad way.
Wow.
So, yeah. So when it's life and death, and it was life and death for me at that point in time, and that was 2002 or 2003, you can, you know, kind of go around, circumvent all of the actions and all of the things that you normally would say, you know, you have to do in order to get rescued, in order to have, you know, come to a place where you're going to be healthy. You know, that was a pretty rough moment, and it did take me about 5-6 months to heal completely. But I did it, and I did not have to have the surgery, which would have created an enormous amount of scar tissue. And, you know, and then the scar tissue creates a million other problems down the road. So so, you know, I was following intuition, and so you end up going around the need to take all these linear steps, and you realize, okay, I'm no longer limited by ideas about time. Same thing.
Yes.
You know, finding information. Same thing with getting perspective on a project, or coming to, you know, you take on a project and you think, well, I should do this and I should do that, and I need to do this research and da da da. And instead, you sit down and you open up, and you end up. For me, like when I'm going to write something, I've always been able to just like open up this door in my consciousness, and this entire download comes in. And sometimes, and I've never written a novel, but there have been times when a novel has come through and I get the characters, I get the setting, I get the dialogue, I get the plot, I get the action all at once.
Wow.
And
yes.
Then, you know, that just goes around the need to figure out and go through all this time to finish or to do the writing. I'm not interested in writing novels, so I don't really write anything like that. But the same thing happens with information about consciousness. I'm playing with all these different aspects of consciousness and studying and saying, you know, why that? What's that about? Et cetera, et cetera. I'm looking for the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden, it arranges itself. And, you know, and then people will say, well, how do you know that? That's a problem. Because you just know. And then it turns out to be correct. And so, you know, the end of time is just the ability to go around all of the steps and go directly to the finish line and have what you need or get what you're after or create what you're trying to create, etc.
Right, right. And, you know, there's plenty of evidence to back up what you're saying. Mozart has claimed that his music arrived in his head complete. That he, every word, every note was in his head of everything he ever did, and he just scribbled it down. And
that's right.
Michelangelo's David, he said he saw David after he had chipped away everything that was not David. And so creation is instantaneous. And the other thing is that we've been taught not to trust our bodies. And so we're relying on a lot of ancient and archaic medicine that is really not good for us at all, like chemotherapy and surgery and a lot of other things that are unnecessary. And we can easily learn to trust the infinite wisdom and intelligence of our bodies, because it's got a bank of doctors, labs, analysis, and it's constantly healing. And we don't question a cut when we get one. It heals, and when it's magic.
That's right.
But yet, when it comes to more serious things in life and death, we start to move into fear, and then fear moves us to make choices that are open an unending series of disasters for our bodies.
That is so true. And if we were taught to just go and ask what the universe, whatever name you want to put on it, you can use God, you can use the universe, you can use source, you can use consciousness. Just ask, and the information begins to come in. If you don't ask, nothing's going to happen.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well,
go ahead.
Well, I was going to kind of segue into another subject, which had come up recently when I had Patty Greer on the show, and she said some pretty remarkable things about having, discovered how crop circles were made, and you were working with her on some of this research, and I'm just paraphrasing here, that the technology has been discovered and recreated, and when they use it, it creates a much denser nutritional value, and the crop is multiplied some 7 or 10 fold I don't remember the statistics, but I was very interested in finding out more about how the crop circles work and what the impact might be on the global food production.
Oh, wow. Patty is referring to the work that Dr. William Levengood did, and that work was amazing. And I think it's just now beginning to sink in. It's like Levengood said, it takes a long time for information to trickle down into everyday use in society or everyday understanding. So what Levengood was studying was material from crop circles. And he, you know, and I'm going to kind of encapsulize a lot of information and leave out a lot of details because it's all in volume two. But, you know, I think really the thing that he discovered was this unusual energy that was coming out of the soil and the plants and the seeds that were associated or that came from crop circles. And so, you know, long story short, he kept working with that energy. He called it CDP, and that stood for charge density pulses originally. And because it would be this pulse of energy that would show up on the chart recorder, and then it would, you know, it would kind of fade down real low, but it never went out. There was this energy being given off by everything. And at first, you know, we thought it was just crop circles only. And then he went looking for people like myself. This was how I met him. And he, you know, we just hit it off, and we kept on working together. And eventually what we discovered was that the stuff that we were tracking was plasma. It was charge density pulses or charge density plasma, either way you wanted to, you know, to call it. It was this energy that was coming naturally from things. But in the course of fiddling around with this and trying to reproduce and trying to identify, you know, all these tests, you know, what about this? Is it that? What happens when you do this? What happens when you do that? Eventually it came down to, you know, he called one day and he said, I think I've got it. I think it's plasma. It passes the test for plasma. So we did some more tests for plasma and ended up, you know, every single one was like, yep, it's plasma. It is behaving like plasma. So at that point, we started playing with the plasma. And long story short was he started treating water with this plasma energy or seeds or plants or bulbs. Didn't matter what you treated, you got an increase in germination, in production of fruit, and farmers call everything fruit, whether it's a vegetable or, you know, an herb, it's a fruit. It's the fruit of the plant.
Right.
And so what we discovered was depending on what you were treating, for instance, I think there's some, I don't know if I put pictures in the book or not of the carrots, but we got a lot more carrots. They were a lot longer, a lot bigger. They were also, there's always a certain number of plants or carrots in a field that are going to be misshapen. And we got a lot less misshapen carrots. And if it was tomatoes, there was a 70% increase in the number of tomatoes. Their weight was heavier. There was, a 400% increase in zucchini. You just do not need to treat zucchini. There was a 400% increase in some of the crops that are used as biofuels. And so we just, you know, tried one year, we treated a whole, my entire garden. You know, I have a fairly good sized garden. Mm-hmm. And so we took the seeds, we split them in half, we treated half, and we left the others as controls. And then I planted and I marked, you know, what were the treated seeds and what were the controls. And oh my, you know, that was an eye opener. The corn that was treated was taller. The ears of corn were bigger around. Wow. The bean we got, oh my gosh, I think I had maybe 15 feet of bean plants. The bean leaves were 8 to 10 inches across, and I got bushel after bushel of beans. I got cucumbers coming out of my ears. Some of them 5 feet long.
Wow.
I got huge cabbages. I got zucchini that, I mean, that, like I said, you do not need to treat zucchini. And the taste and the keeping quality of everything was phenomenal. We took other plants or other seeds and we treated them with this little process and then, you know, sent them in to be germinated by a company that does testing. And the amount of mold and mildew that is in a set of germinated seeds is fairly standard, but in the seeds that we sent in that had been treated with this process, there was almost no mold and no bacteria. The plant roots were twice the size of the controls. The germination was almost 100%, where sometimes you get only, you know, sometimes as low as 50% germination in herbs. Vegetables, you like to get at least 80, and they promise 90%, but you don't get that. But we did get almost 100%. There might be one or two seeds out of 30 that did not germinate. And then there was this this amazing difference in growth that, you know, faster. There was disease resistance, there was cold resistance, there was heat resistance, there was drought resistance, there was wet resistance.
Wow.
It was amazing. So yeah, there are things, and we're coming up against what I'm going to call some really serious climate difficulties, because the climate is getting colder, and we have been steered in just the opposite direction, you know. And most of that, I think most of that climate change stuff is, as it was called, climate warming, and I think they've changed it now to climate change. Because it's obviously not warming, it's cooling. And we're heading into like a Dalton minimum or a Maunder minimum. I think it starts in just a couple years, maybe starts this year even. And there's some real difficulties happening in terms of climate, and that's going to pose challenges for us to produce enough food for everybody. And so lots of people are starting to grow inside. Well, when you grow inside, you better have a full range of frequencies that you can expose those plants to, so that the fruit has the full range of nutritional frequencies in the fruit.
Right.
And if it doesn't, then that it'll fill your belly, but it won't allow your body to rebuild itself. It won't provide the minerals and the nutrients that you need.
For clarification, did Dr. Leavenworth invent a machine that projects the plasma energies which you got from the crop circles and then projects that onto the seeds and plants? Is it a physical machine?
Yes. Yes,
okay.
It was. There were a couple things that we fiddled with. He had already developed something, and it was Leavenworth, not Leavenworth.
Oh, okay.
I think it was a prison.
Yeah, okay.
So, but Leavenworth started out with, two plates that would generate an ion-electron avalanche. And that avalanche of electromagnetic fields hitting the seeds on the bottom plate was so traumatic to the seeds that they ended up having to reorganize. And so the seeds, if you took those seeds and you treated them to an ion electron avalanche, then they would not germinate for a while, because a seed is a living system, and it would reorganize itself. First of all, it would have to clean up the damage that was caused by the heavy-duty electromagnetic fields.
Right.
And then would reorganize its chemistry, and because a seed is intelligent. Mm-hmm. And that reorganization of its energy would allow it to get rid of tremendous amounts of toxins and oxidation products, and it would develop its own inner antioxidant system so that it could deal with anything.
It didn't matter
what you threw at that seed. After about 4 to 6 weeks, it had completely reorganized itself, and that would then, it would be ready to, when you put it in the ground, it was ready to go, and it took off like gangbusters. And I think there's a principle in there that I want to mention. Everything, whether it's a human being or a seed or a plant, a living plant, or an animal, it doesn't matter what, everything is looking for energy. And so, for instance, I had the whole 3 or 4 years, and actually it's been 40 years now, of dealing with Kundalini, full Kundalini experiences. The first 3 years were the worst, because you have these massive blasts of energy moving through the system, moving through your body. That allows the energy body to reorganize itself in a similar way that the little seed reorganizes itself when it's hit with all these electromagnetic energies. And so when Kundalini happens, you get this massive influx of energies, and it does change everything about your consciousness. It changes everything about your physiology. Everything is different, and you can see and hear and know things that you never dreamed of before.
Oh, yeah.
And you can see the picture of reality. So we have this parallel between the seed that takes this massive hit of energy and uses that energy to reorganize itself. And I think the same thing happens with Kundalini. You get this massive hit of energy and you reorganize yourself, and you can do things that other people then never have dreamed of doing, is what it comes down to.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, yes, I had one in 2002, I think it was. And it was just such a powerful experience that, as you said, it just completely,
yeah.
It's so shocking that I made up an analogy, your eyeballs pop out of your head and your tongue's on the floor. You're so shocked.
Hey, that's perfect. Yeah. Wow.
Well, now.
I
know that Dr. Leavenworth has passed. Is anybody picking up the work on these machines and bringing them to the public, or is there some kind of effort to continue developing this technology?
There's a little bit.
Oh.
Most of his papers and things have been archived and put aside, but there's a group that is in, I think it's Georgia, And they are fiddling around with some of that same energy. And then Patty has met a scientist named Ken, and he has picked up some of this technology and is experimenting with it. And so I think, that there's another group in the Washington, D.C. area that has asked me about it. And I'm like, yeah, okay. And I think also one of the partners that we had in the lab wasn't really a partner, but a guy who came in and talked and shared and, listened and added his two cents. He's at Michigan State University. I think he's using it. Not a whole lot is being said. People do not get the implications of energy. Mm-hmm. They don't really understand it. It's kind of a figment of their imagination, or they think it's a figment of our imagination. Mm-hmm. And yet, it's not a figment. When you turn on the light switch and, you start to get all of these electrons flowing along a wire at a certain rate with a certain frequency, and that's not imagination. That's energy.
Right, and when Tesla pulled the energy out of the air and proved that we didn't need wires and tubings and glass bulbs, that the energy is in the air and it can be extracted and used on a very large scale. That, of course, his work was marginalized and taken, and there, I think it was J.P. Morgan who denied him a loan because he had copper mines that needed to be, he wanted to sell his copper, and you couldn't make money on free energy.
Yeah, so Edison, that is true.
Edison got all the patents, and he developed the light bulb, and we're still using them to this day. Only they've gotten worse. Now they have mercury in them.
This is true. Yeah, we're coming to the end of that. I think we're going to see this humongous wave of innovation over this next decade, probably starting already. But I think we can pretty much say that by 2021, a lot of people are going to be blown away by what is possible and by what's happening, in terms of plasma energies. How is it being used for medicine? Mm-hmm. How is it being used for education? How is it being used for free energy, or to change agriculture, or mm-hmm. How is it being used in weaponry? Once you understand plasma, you can see the applications everywhere, and it is astounding. So we're coming up to that.
Well, I believe you. And, the technology, a lot of technology has been developed over the last 3 or 4 or 5 decades privately by corporations and governments and so on and so forth, and it's been kept from us intentionally. So we've actually been living in kind of the dark ages and kept at a level that is substandard, and they've patented and they're using it and have space travel and bases on some of our planets and who knows what else. I mean, we don't know because those are top secret groups, but we know that they do.
Well, here's a question that I would raise for people to think about. Do you really need someone to tell you what you already know?
Right.
If you come from a paradigm in which you are helpless, or you have no trust in your own knowledge, or you're not able to put things together for yourself because you never have permission to do that, mm-hmm. then yes, you're going to need an authority, a government, somebody to tell you that this is true.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if you come from a position of thinking for yourself, critical thinking, able to synthesize information, and able to see the writing on the wall, you really don't need a government or an authority to say, oh, yeah, we have a breakaway civilization, or yes, we have ETs, or yes, you know, this or that. Those of us who have had experiences with ETs, we don't need anybody to tell us that that's a real thing.
Right.
You know.
Right.
The people who say no, I feel sorry for them, you know.
Yeah.
Those are sort of lost souls, people. I'm not sure what to say. I hate to say anything. You know, it's just like, well, that's too bad you haven't had that experience, because it's an eye-opener.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. So I think we have to come, or and are coming to a point where if the government says, oh, yeah, by the way, we have ETs, we're not alone in the universe, I think a lot of people are going to say, oh, really? You know, we knew that years ago. What else have you got? So it's not going to be a huge shock.
Right, right.
That's just where we're at.
Yes, and so much of that has to do with conditioning and mind control and belief systems being planted in our heads simply poo-poo all of that. And so there's a lot of disinformation that's keeping us from having an open mind. But I've read most of your books, and I love them all. But in your book, The Robes, you had some experiences with some beings of light that talked about the breakaway civilization, and your experiences were absolutely amazing. So if people want to read about these things, they can at least find out what somebody else has written and see, you know, what the experiences are.
Yeah, you know, those experiences were transformative for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wasn't really ready for them, but you know, and I wasn't really very smooth with them at all.
Yeah.
But as time goes on, and I look at what's happening in the world, even I'm shocked, even though I already saw all of that and wrote it up 20 years ago in 1990, you know, between 92 and 97. And now I look at it and go, oh my. And so I'm coming to this place now where I'm feeling very, very strongly that, you know, okay, the first parts of what they showed me, which were, you know, why things were going to fall apart and how that was going to happen and, you know, et cetera. Mm. The second half, you know, the other things they showed me were where we were headed and what we could create. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm really, really excited about, you know, where we're going and what we can create. And as I have been watching the takedown of the deep state over the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 months, mm-hmm. That excitement has grown. And I think there's this, on the day after Christmas, there was this massive shift in the energy of the United States. And I don't know exactly what that shift was about, mm-hmm. but I'm speculating that the mass of humanity in the U.S. somehow picked up at the telepathic level that there were possibilities, that we had a future, that it was a good future, mm-hmm. that things were going to happen that were, you know, that would open doors for us, mm-hmm. and you know, pull us out of this. You know, as I watched the Bushes become president, and mm-hmm. you know, and Barack Obama, and even Clinton, Bill Clinton, mm-hmm. I was very much aware that there was this very subtle message going out to all of us in the U.S. that was, and the message was, it's okay to lie, mm-hmm. it's okay to cheat, it's okay to ignore what the guy you're talking to is saying.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to tell him he doesn't know what he's talking about. It's okay to cheat. It's okay to do, to get away with whatever you think you can get away with.
Yeah.
And that was very unethical. We had an unethical period that lasted for probably 20 years.
Easily.
And that message, easily, yeah, right. That has been what seems to be reversed in just since December 26th of, you know, what, 3 weeks ago?
Yes.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
Yeah, it's very subtle. And that is one of the things that, you know, I do is pay attention to the very subtle shifts in energy and who's doing what. And, you know, amazing things are really happening right now. And I think it's going to be hard for people who haven't been paying attention over this next year. But it's, you know, I think we're going to have to, what would I call it, hold the space. For people to be shocked and to cry or to be upset and to say, it's okay, it's better, it's getting better now.
Right,
so,
right. It's a positive thing. Shifts are going to be overwhelming, like a Kundalini experience, and that's what I saw when I had that experience, that what's coming is going to be absolutely mind-blowing, and you can't possibly be prepared for it, even if you know everything under the sun. And even the most astute and tuned in people will be shocked out of their wits.
And I think they will be shocked at how far back it goes. I think when I was doing the research for Volume 3, which really started out to be one book and became another book altogether. That, you know, what I realized was that there was a thread that I could see. Some of it was intuitive and some of it was being able to connect the dots that went all the way back to Abraham. And that, you know, that story that they tell about Abraham had to do with the sacrifice of a child being, you know, that he was going to sacrifice his son.
Right.
And at the last minute, he said no. But that was a common theme, and that was a common practice back then. This is in, you know, 1800 BC. That was very common. Children were not valued. And children, even in the U.S. today, we often are accused by other countries of having a child-centered culture and of letting children make all the decisions. And they're raising us instead of we're raising them. What? And there have been some arguments among some of the anthropologists who are saying nobody else in the world except for the U.S. has this amazing focus on children. Mm-hmm. And I remember the first time I read that, I thought, where is that coming from? You know, most of the children I know are not very happy. They haven't been raised very well.
Right.
You know,
most parents shouldn't be raising children.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. We don't know what we're doing.
No, absolutely not. And doing the exact opposite to make them, to turn them into just wrecks.
Right.
You know, disasters waiting to happen.
Yeah. Emotional, psychological wrecks.
Every level.
And, yeah. Go ahead.
Well, it's just that, you know, that is the case. That's the truth. I just heard a story from a friend of mine who went to the woman's house that they knew, and she was so busy that she put her baby in the oven with the gas on. And he said, what are you doing? And she said, well, he's too much trouble, and the gas relaxes him. He said, you get that baby out of the oven, and I don't want to see it ever in there again. You could kill him. But that was her solution to, you know, a child that was giving her too much trouble. And another person would put his boy in the trunk, and because he didn't want to hear him talking while he was in the car. So he put him in the trunk. Well, you can imagine the impact on your self-esteem. So, you know, I hear these things all the time, and I see the results, and really, I think there's going to be a revolution in that area as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I have written a few things about, you know, people should not be allowed to have children unless they have had some really deep training.
Absolutely.
About how to raise.
Basic things, yeah.
Yeah.
So
we have to go back to the thread that I was following. We have this ancient thread. It's very fine and it's very subtle, but it goes back to Abraham. He was promised that his descendants would be as many as the stars in the sky and as many as the grains of sand on the beach. And that, you know, basically he was going to rule the world. I think that is at the core of the what I'll call the cabal and the deep state.
Yes.
It has been carried forward for thousands of years now.
Yes.
And if you know the true history of the Christians, and you know, the term Christian comes from the ancient word chrétien, which means idiot. And you know, that's just so shocking. And yet, you know, the Christians, the early Christians, were the same in their time as the Islamic militants and terrorists are in our time.
Yes.
And what I think we're going to uncover in this next, I'm going to say, year, 2 years, is this this very hidden network of people who still worshipped and practiced child sacrifice and all of that kind of stuff. And it's going to be shocking to people. Yeah. And yet I think it's going to be the kick in the pants that we need to make a leap in consciousness. And we have almost enough people now to make that leap. Mm-hmm. There has to be a certain number of people who make that leap, and it has to be global, otherwise it'll backslide. Having a chance to evolve, and that I think is the exciting piece in all of it. And you know, and the latest election that we had, you know, I know there's lots of uproar still going on around that, but we had to choose Trump, and it was kind of like I'm writing a piece right now that I'm going to put up, and it's about the trickster setup, kind of like the princess who has to kiss a frog, you know. Yeah. And, you know, here we have these two choices, these two paths. One is this path that looks totally normal and it's polished and it's smooth talking. And then we have this orange-haired clown that is presenting himself. Uh-huh. And we cannot choose the old path because it just goes deeper into the corruption and the child sacrifice.
Right.
And the cabal and the deep state. And so we choose the orange-haired clown.
Yeah.
And, you know, and now we're just now, after a year, coming out of that. It's like when you have a major choice like that. I call it the trickster setup. You know, you have to choose the trickster. And then after you make the choice, everybody's criticizing you. Oh my God, look what you did. This was a mistake. He's this, he's an idiot. He hasn't done this. He's making all the same mistakes. He's not doing blah, blah, blah. And you have to stand your ground.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the test. That test follows the choice.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the test comes this slow, gradual strengthening and this slow ability to be able to verbalize what you were trying to make happen, why you didn't want to go the other way. And so we're right there at that point right now, just coming out of the test. So
very well
the media
said.
Has Yeah, the medium has been a very good test. And it's a, you know, in consciousness, this is all going on in consciousness. If you backslide, you're going to be in deep doo-doo, and you're going to have another cycle that's going to be 10 times worse, and it's going to be much harder, and you might even not survive another round. And so we are at a point of, you know, we have to make that leap in consciousness, and we're right there right now. And I think that's going to be made in the next decade, because by 2050, everything is different, and we're already almost at 2020. So
I never thought I'd be alive this long.
I think people are going to be alive for a long time. If you know how to use plasma, you can use plasma to reset your entire energy body back to its prime, in which case you don't age, or you don't, you know, chronologically you'll be old, but physically, biologically, you won't be. And I think it's going to come down to, you know, how long do you want to stay here? You know, is your tour of duty done? Or do you want to go somewhere else and try some other place? Because there's lots of other reality systems out there.
Oh, yeah.
This is a very interesting one. So.
Well, you know, I want to kind of, I love what we're talking about. And I just wanted to squeeze one more quick question in, because a dear friend of mine in Ojai started taking pictures of orbs after she went to a conference where David Icke was speaking, and she had an adjustment on her neck that was done supposedly to correct what the reptilians had set in motion, which had disallowed our connecting with spirit. And I had it done also, and we became good friends, and she started taking pictures at night, and the pictures showed up thousands of orbs and different ones, and she's got a story on them all. And I just wondered if you could briefly kind of cover as much as you can in the next few minutes.
So let me say, this is something that Dr. Levengood and I talked a lot about. What were those orbs? You know, where do they come from? Why were some of them acting as if they were intelligent, or as if they were interacting with us? Why did some of them have the appearance of a face, and others just had a pattern? And we never really settled it, but the conversations that we had led me later, after he was gone, to be working with, I'm just going to say, working with somebody else.
Well, folks, something really strange happened when Penny was talking about the orbs. She faded out, and her connection dropped, and she's not available. Right at the end of the show, it was getting really good. So I'm going to invite her back, and we'll continue that conversation, because it's a really fascinating one on orbs. And I urge everybody to look into Penny's work, her books, and her website, and it's fascinating research. So thank you for listening tonight, and have a good night, everybody. Good night.